From the 89.1 WBOI studios in Fort Wayne, Indiana, welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer, producer and host of this program, and thank you for joining me. For this week's show, we'll hear a talk recorded as part of the Values, Ideas, and the Arts series at Manchester University, focusing on the near-future impacts of human-caused climate change and the role everyone has in building sustainable solutions. Growing Sustainability at Manchester with Jason Elliott. Stay close. This show is coming to you on the heels of our fall membership drive. Thank you to everyone who helped us to reach our goal quickly and successfully. You can always become a sustaining member online at WBOI.org. Whether or not we are on air actively fundraising, I don't think I can say enough about how important university partnerships are to this program. The panel discussions, in-session conversations, and presentations like the one we are about to hear wouldn't be possible without our friends at Purdue University Fort Wayne, the University of St. Francis, and Manchester University. We've brought you many speakers from Manchester's Values, Ideas, and the Arts series, and I'll turn things over now to a current student who will introduce Jason Elliott, this week's speaker and a Manchester alumnus. Please enjoy the show.
Hello, I'm Dinah Gilbert, and I am a senior studying environmental studies and peace studies and religious studies at Manchester. Today, we are very excited to welcome Jason Elliott back to Manchester. Jason graduated from Manchester in 2011 after studying both accounting and economics. He went to earn his master's from Duke University and now serves as the Assistant Director for Sustainability for Duke, where he works to develop a broad array of goals to mitigate climate change through sustainable solutions. Today, he will share with us firsthand experience about how students and community members can work towards a more sustainable future, regardless of their area of study. Please note that we will have time for 15 minutes of question and answer immediately following the program, so get questions ready. Please join me in welcoming Jason Elliott.
Good morning, folks. How's everyone doing? As I was introduced, I'm Jason Elliott, and I'm currently the Assistant Director for Sustainable Duke. It has been 10 years since I've been sitting where you're sitting right now, and just last night I was reminded how what it feels like to be in college again, where I was woken up by a panic dream about being late to this by 30 minutes. It felt like a final exam all over again. Today, we're going to be spending a little bit of time diving into what I do and how I see sustainability and how that might infuse itself at Manchester. So we're going to first start with definitions of sustainability. It's not always as direct as most folks think, and so I have a specific definition that I'd like to share with you all. And then we're going to talk about how many hands make lighter work in terms of the fight against climate change. And then we're going to start talking about how to grow sustainability at Manchester College. Well, university. Apologies. I went to Manchester back when it was still a college. And then we're going to have a little bit of a call to action at the very end, talking about charting your own path. So before we get too deep into this, I want to give 10-second pause for you to think about, what do you think about when you hear the word sustainability? Most of the time when I ask those questions, it's usually to audience of students, staff, and faculty at Duke University, but also in presentations across the nation. A lot of people start with things like riding your bike or commuting by other modes of transportation that don't require fossil fuels. Talk about recycling or reducing their use and consumption, renewable energy, and planting trees. These things all are very common to hear about and all correct. However, today I kind of want to spend a little bit of time pivoting the paradigm a little bit to broaden it. And so back in 1987, the United Nations drafted the Brundtland Report. They define sustainable development as development that meets the needs of the present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. I find this definition to be very interesting because I'm always wondering, needs like what? Are we talking about food, shelter? Are we talking about a livable climate? Are we talking about being able to live where we desire? Also, future generations of what or whom? This was written by people, so maybe we're talking about humans and their sustainability, but what about all the other plants and animals and ecosystems that we have in the world? Another definition that I would draw your attention to is from UCLA's sustainability office, where they define sustainability as the integration of environmental health, social equity, and economic vitality in order to create thriving, healthy, diverse, and resilient communities for this generation and generations to come. The practice of sustainability also recognizes how these issues are interconnected and require a systems approach and an acknowledgement of the complexity. What I like about this is that it's starting to broaden it kind of into a very different realm, starting to talk about environmental, social, and economic sustainability. So that is kind of where we're at Duke University. The way that we look at sustainability is through these three lenses or pillars, where environment, natural resources, pollution, environmental management have to go hand in hand with economic sustainability. Can the project produce a profit? Can it save cost over time? Is there economic growth potential? And the social aspects in terms of human standard of living, educational opportunities, community engagement, and some of the newer things that we're looking into more in the environmental justice realm, which is an intersection, a really great intersection of these three elements. The last thing that's not on this slide, but I eventually want to have it in there, is human health and wellness. This is something that has been popping up at Duke University's health system a lot more recently, where we're trying to identify what is the impact on climate change in terms of our humans' health and wellness within urban environments and within rural environments. Another even broader way to think about sustainability is the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. They have these very broad goals that countries have adopted starting in 2015 to work towards with the hope of eliminating poverty in all its forms everywhere, ending hunger, achieving food security and improved nutrition, and promoting sustainable agriculture, achieving gender equality and empowerment of all women and girls, promoting sustained, inclusive, and sustainable economic growth, reducing inequality within and among countries, taking urgent action to combat climate change and its impacts, promoting peace and inclusive societies for sustainable development, and provide access to justice for all. When we started talking about these goals at Duke University, we're like, wow, these things are massive. How can we even think about how our role in this could possibly make a huge impact? And so we're trying to work on identifying Duke's role in this and how we can take these goals and apply it to our campus. Thankfully, we are not alone. There are many other campuses across the nation and across the world who are working on this very same situation and trying to identify ways that we can make our campuses more sustainable. But my favorite thing about these is that they're so much broader than what people normally think about as sustainability. And I'm hoping that you eventually, regardless of your future path, can see yourself in these realms. So, transition now. Many hands make lighter work. Climate change, I'm not going to really talk about that much because you are all smart and you've all heard about it before. But it's something that we need all tools in the toolbox to work to solve it. So one of the first questions, who is responsible for creating solutions to climate change? This is one of those things that I ask my students in trying to identify where they see themselves in the solution to climate change and where they see that they could be potential advocates for other entities. And so here's a group who've developed this little tool to kind of think about who at the table do we need? And so technical potential, meaning earth science majors, biogeochemistry, engineering folks to develop the solutions that are being identified. We need our environmental economists and ecological economists to think about the cost effectiveness. We need folks to think about the ecological risks. So if we were to put in a dam to produce renewable energy, what are the potential risks to the ecology of that river? Ethical concerns, meaning philosophy and environmental ethicists need to come together to kind of help us think through where are we supposed to be putting these projects? Maybe we're putting them in the backyards of individuals that can't necessarily advocate for change in their communities. We might be putting it in a place that has animals that are endangered. And so thinking about those ethical concerns. Institutional capacity. And so at Duke University, this comes up a lot. And so you need your folks in management to kind of identify what resources do you actually have available to do what you're trying to do. And then public acceptance, the psychologists, the sociologists, the folks who are trying to communicate what is a pretty difficult concept to a larger audience. So who are sustainability professionals? We have our climate change researchers. We have our renewable energy engineers. And what I heard from my family when I told them that I wanted to go into sustainability, what they called me a tree hugger, which I more adequately like to refer to them as environmental advocates. So these are some of the positions that are available today and a lot of folks think about when thinking about sustainability. However, my favorite thing about this field is that it's constantly changing, and there are jobs that we are not even knowing what they're going to be yet that are coming down the pipeline that we can prepare ourselves for. Some of these newer types of positions are Majora Carter, who's a real estate developer and urban revitalization strategist based in the South Bronx. Her work is of transforming communities into mixed-use local economies embodies her phrase of you don't have to move out of your neighborhood to live in a better one. Mary Barra is the CEO of General Motors, and she's the first female CEO of a big three automaker. I had the good fortune to work with her this past year on Duke University's Board of Trustees, and I'm amazed by her commitment to moving to an all-electric vehicle future and the creation of a climate equity fund. Michael Regan is the first Black man to serve as the EPA's administrator. He was born and raised in North Carolina and has a strong track record for elevating concerns of environmental racism and developing just solutions. Michelle Nolan, she is one of our faculty at Duke University, and she's a co-chair of the Environmental Law and Policy Clinic, as she's an environmental lawyer. I had the good fortune to be in the clinic when I was a grad student at Duke and being able to learn about how our various industries in North Carolina, from hog farming to cement manufacturing, really impact the communities that are being placed in there. Not only thinking about the people, but the watersheds that are nearby. And so I really love highlighting our folks that we have at Duke who do this really great work. Marina DeBrie is an artist who was born in Detroit, studied at Indiana University, and now lives in Australia. And she does art and fashion that raises awareness about beach and ocean pollution. As you see from her necklace, it's got the bubble blowers, little plastic balls, things that just show up on the beach. And so she has a large ability to take this difficult concept of pollution and put it in a way that people might resonate with and understand how they're seeing our decisions in action. And then last, Jeffrey Ubben is a veteran of the investment world and is currently the founder and managing partner of Inclusive Capital Partners, which is an investment firm that is focused on ESG investing. ESG is environment, social governance investment, which is trying to pivot the mentality of large-scale investment towards companies that really work to highlight environmental, social, and governance solutions. What do you think all these people have in common? Do you think they all started from a similar path? Probably not. But they're all ending up doing stuff that is working towards solutions on climate change. Now, I'm going to talk about another person. It's going to be me and my story because I also come from a somewhat non-traditional path. So here I am as a little baby born in Goshen, Indiana. I lived with my mom and my brother, and we were low income, and I was a first-generation college student. And growing up, my mom always taught us that we are supposed to make this world better than what we are getting now. And so I tried to really think about how does that work? And so thankfully, my junior year of high school, someone from Manchester College came and was presenting about their opportunities. And one of the things that I was excited about was accounting. I was the only kid in my advanced accounting class in high school, and that was something that I liked the rigor, I liked the rules around doing that, and I liked playing around with numbers and data. And so I was like, great, finally a thing that makes sense with me, but I will eventually have to figure out, well, what do I do with this? So I just, like I said, started with accounting. Later, I started taking some economics courses and really started liking the theoretical approach that it was providing to thinking about how people make decisions. And so I then had to decide, well, where does that take me? I want to work in climate change or something that betters the world. So how can I take these skills that I'm learning in the classroom and potentially pivot them to a different paradigm? And so bookkeeping and auditing really helps out a lot with greenhouse gas accounting, making sure that you are able to collect the data and input it and make sure that people understand what you're doing, and then auditing the results to make sure that all the numbers are correct, that you don't have any material misstatements anywhere. Environmental economics was one of the first courses that I took that helped me actually think about a future career in the environment, thinking about valuation of resources. And that was one of the things where so often we value resources based on human desire and financial return. But this class taught me about, you know, how do you value a natural park or a national park, something that doesn't necessarily have a ready economic impact, that is always higher than what development might be. And so that course really taught me to think about things in a broader way. Behavioral economics was a huge shift for me as well. Economics generally teaches us that people make perfect decisions because they have perfect information. But as you all know, we do not make perfect decisions because we do not have perfect information. And so how can we actually think about human behavior change in a space where you don't have all the pieces that you need to know about? And so ways to nudge people towards more sustainable behaviors or behaviors that you think would be better. And last one is a non-traditional one. I studied abroad in Japan, and one of the things that was really exciting there is that I was able to learn Japanese. I went there to learn, and then I met Japanese students was wanting to teach them a little bit about English. And so when I came back to Manchester, Beata Gillier was teaching TESOL, teaching English to speakers of other languages. And the way I look at this is its ability to communicate difficult concepts to diverse audiences. And that's something that is not always easy in the climate change world because it's so huge. And so how do you break it down and apply it to a person who might not come with the same level of jargon or the same level of language? Beyond the classroom, though, I needed to start thinking about, well, what do I like to do outside of class? And so I liked getting my hands dirty. I was a co-manager of Manchester's Organic Garden over a decade ago. I liked advocating for change. And so here's a picture of us during a peace studies trip to Washington, D.C. And that was something where I got to meet with a bunch of different folks of like minds trying to find ways to make the world as you want to see it. I liked building community. I was one of the heads of the LGBT organization on campus. I was not a pretty drag queen, but it was something that was really awesome to be able to meet people who are your folks, your tribe, that you can actually engage with and have them challenge you to make decisions. I liked exploring nature, going on hikes with friends throughout the U.S. And so here's a picture of me and a couple other accounting students, and we went hiking in Tennessee. I liked being a leader on campus, and so I was a student orientation leader. I was in the student government. I was the head of the student budget board. All of these things that I really got to see all the inner workings and then work with diverse audiences to understand what their needs are given limited resources. And my final year, I got to conduct research. And so I worked with my economics advisor, John Deal, and Matt Hendricks to work on a research paper that we later ended up getting published, which is something that was very exciting to me. And so I was wondering, well, how can I do all of these things, take what I learned in class, apply it to what I'm, you know, doing here in terms of the things that I like to do outside of class and have research component. And so that's what brings me to graduate school. I applied to many schools right after graduating from Manchester, and I got into Duke University's Nicholas School of the Environment. It was something that I wasn't necessarily expecting that I could find a program that fit what I wanted, but they have an environmental economics program. And so I got a master's degree in that because it was right up my alley. And then when I was there, I realized that I have a great set of tools, but I need something I want to apply it to. And so I also got my master's degree in forestry. Most of my focus was on urban forestry as it relates to Duke University, to Durham, but even broader to all other cities around the nation. And so with urban forestry, one of the things that was very interesting about it is that I had to think about, well, where should trees go? in terms of limited resources, meaning limited money to pay for where they need to go. And something that happens in Durham, and as well as many other urban environments, there is a long history of historic redlining, meaning there was a lack of investment in these communities that were traditionally Black and brown people, and working towards not giving them the resources that they need. And so we had a group of students who did research project on that issue, and we started planting trees in those communities with the community partners that we built. And then the other thing, I was able to be a wildfire analyst at the Nature Conservancy. And a lot of these things, just because I was in forestry, were brand new to me, didn't even know that these were potential pathways. But a lot of my work, aside from being able to get trained to be a wildland firefighter, was working on trying to identify ways that we can help combat climate change by making sure that we are not having huge wildfires that are taking over a lot of our world right now in some ways, like California, Australia, and Siberia, places that we're just emitting so much carbon. And so how can we actually make these systems more resilient over time? The last thing, my last summer intern, I was able to start Duke University's first tree inventory because me and another student, after taking some classes, approached our facilities group and said, we would like to see this on campus. Your trees are super valuable, and some folks are seeing them cut down and wanting to know, well, what's the cost of cutting them down? Not just the financial cost of having somebody go out there, but what is the carbon sequestration that's being lost? The water that is no longer being evaporated, what are we doing about the stormwater that's building up? And so thankfully they said yes and hired us to do this work. And so now we have a database of over 10,000 trees, and those are being used to help us better plan for the future. So after all of my grad school experience, thankfully I needed a job. Everybody's eventually going to need one. And so I started my professional journey by working with what's called the Duke Carbon Offsets Initiative. The Duke Carbon Offsets Initiative is the first university-based initiative of its kind that's just focused solely on developing carbon offsets. These are projects that are being built off campus that reduce emissions. So some examples that I got to work on was swine waste to energy, where we took animal waste from a hog farm in North Carolina, mainly because there's more hogs than people in North Carolina. So identifying that as a major methane emission source, trying to capture that methane, and then we turned it into renewable electricity on site. I was also able to work on urban forestry, as I talked about before, and residential energy efficiency. There's a lot of older building stock here in Durham, North Carolina. And so working with the communities to identify how can we potentially upgrade your home with relatively little cost, but will really reduce your energy bills going forward. After a few years of doing that, a new position opened up at Duke University, which I applied for, which was the Assistant Director of Sustainable Duke. What I like about this is that it pivots focusing mostly on campus sustainability. And I get to work with the president and all the other higher level administration, as well as the students, staff, and faculty to develop university-wide strategies to reduce emissions, as well as make the campus more sustainable. One of the big goals that drew me to Duke University was that we have a carbon neutrality commitment by 2024, which is now 3 short years away, which somewhat terrifies me how quickly that is coming up. But it is the earliest of any of our Ivy Plus peers. And so that's something where Duke University is out leading, and I really like that they're taking that stance. I also do a lot of data collection and analysis. There's where my econ and accounting come back in. And so some of the things that I'm collecting data on every day are greenhouse gases at Duke University, but I also do the financial numbers for our office. And so that's something that I'm glad I still get to keep that wonderful little aspect of myself in the in this. And then the very last thing, I get to co-teach classes. I never thought in a million years that I would be able to teach students without a PhD. And so I work with other faculty, and we teach them mostly like project-based courses that folks are getting their hands dirty on campus, trying to identify ways to build energy reports for all of our campus buildings so they can better understand what their historical energy use is and why they should make a change. We've worked with folks around the city of Durham to develop residential solar, which is something that we ended up getting 30 homes to sign up to install solar on their roofs before a tax credit in North Carolina ran out. And so there's these really great opportunities that I can actually see the impact every single day. And then the constant question that just, you know, sticks in my mind, what do I want to be when I grow up? I still don't necessarily know. A lot of these things that I'm in right now just feel like they've happened out of luck. Something was opening it up right as I was getting ready to jump. And so I was very fortunate, but I really like working in higher education. It's something where you can work with a lot of folks who have a lot of passion and ways to find a way to channel that passion towards sustainable solutions has been really awesome. But who knows? I could go and work in consulting one day. I could go work back at the Nature Conservancy and preserving lands, just trying to keep my eyes open. So you may be wondering, what does any of Jason's story have to do with you? I think some of the important key takeaways is that there is no predestined future for you just based on your area of study. I am living proof that whatever pathway you kind of follow doesn't necessarily mean like I studied accounting, therefore I'm doing accounting. But you might be doing it in a slightly different way. I encourage you to kind of keep your eyes open for paths that align with your passions and academic interests, because that'll make your work a lot more enjoyable in the future. And then lastly, climate change, as we saw from all of those professionals at the very beginning, it's going to take all folks from all disciplines to develop truly sustainable solutions. So regardless of your major or area of study, we need your help. So now we're going to talk about growing sustainability at Manchester. Thankfully, Manchester already has pretty great sustainability foundations. Here's a short list of things that Manchester is already doing that I was able to find either through the website or things that I was working on when I was a student. And so water and energy use reduction upgrades in campus buildings, great environmental studies program, Kick the Bottle Initiative, trayless dining, ways to find ways to reuse things, Manchester University's environmental club, the Graduation Pledge for Social and Environmental Responsibility, which has been going on since 1988, is a thing that you can pledge to do as you're about to graduate. And we'll talk about that pledge in a little bit. We have a leading peace studies department. And as we saw in the Sustainable Development Goals from the United Nations, peace is a big part of it. And then affordability and availability of scholarships. As I mentioned before, as a first-generation student from a low-income family, I didn't actually know if college would ever fit for me. But because of Manchester's ability to give scholarships and working with other institutions and entities outside of Manchester, I was able to make that happen. And so that's something that is, I think, awesome that Manchester provides. But how do you grow from there? And so some of the things that I first like to start with is the classes you take. So you could be in any class and find it ways to think about sustainability. And there might already be folks who are pivoting towards that. You don't necessarily have to take an environmental studies class to learn about sustainability. You can take an accounting class. You can take an art class. You can take a public policy class. Research projects. One of my things that I remember my roommate, Jacob Wenger, was doing when he was a student at Manchester is working with the Eel River Restoration Project, where they remove some dams and are just seeing, how is it working? Is the ecosystem recovering? And so it was very interesting to hear about this long-term project that is using the Manchester campus and community as a living laboratory. And so finding ways to pivot your class's research project, whether you are saying you have to write a paper and you get to choose the topic, pivot it towards something that you have a passion about, or you might get involved with a lab on campus. Campus action, generally. And so one of the first things that I think is most important in this sustainability growth journey is setting goals. And so Manchester might already have some goals that you could look at and build upon, but there might be some goals that, according to what we've been talking about in terms of social and economic sustainability, as well as environmental sustainability, that you could potentially expand them into ways that make it more sustainable. Internships. Folks are probably already thinking about internships for this coming summer. Where are you deciding to work? Is it a company that has sustainability as a part of their focus? Is it something that you could potentially learn about sustainability through your work? Could you help inform that company how to be more sustainable? And those are all things that I think you can easily make your case for. Volunteering out in the community, whether it's a tree planting, whether it's reading to people about climate change or teaching about whatever you have your passion in. Manchester has a pretty great track record of volunteer hours. I think in 1 year, it's like 25,000 hours of volunteering, which is impressive to me, given the number of students on campus. Policy advocacy, whether you want to go and protest or whether you want to write letters to your either local city councils, to your state representatives, or to federal entities, talking about what you think is important and how to actually make your dreams become a reality is a really great place for you to spend your energy. And then lastly, thinking about your future careers. As I mentioned before, sustainability is on the rise. And it's one of the things that we don't necessarily know what the future of sustainability careers is always going to look like. And so you can actually chart your own path. Speaking of charting your own path, here we are about to talk about it. So when I think about what you should be doing and taking away from this, I'm not expecting you to go out and be the EPA administrator. I don't expect you to be a director of sustainability, but I expect that, and I hope that you actually take away that you can make some small changes, whether it's in your personal life or your professional life, that will lead to more sustainable examples. Some of the things that I find to be the most useful things to reflect upon are mission statements of companies. And so thankfully, Manchester's mission statement, this is just a partial part of it, but leading principled, productive, and compassionate lives that improve the human condition. That is something that you can go many different ways into looking into this, but it was something that resonated with me back when I was a student, and I'm hoping it resonates with you as you are now becoming these people who are getting ready to graduate from this wonderful institution. I also like to think about, and as I mentioned before, the graduation pledge that says to take into account the social and environmental consequences of any job you consider and work to improve these aspects wherever you work. It is not always the most apparent thing, but taking a little bit of time to when you get to a new company and learning about what they're doing already and how they could potentially improve is what I think this pledge is about. So I'm going to quickly offer some special thanks to the Peace Studies Department, especially Katie Gray Brown, for reaching out to me nearly 20 months ago when I was supposed to speak back in April 2020, but thus the pandemic happened, and Virginia Rendler for helping set this up. The economics department, where my advisor, Jonathan Deal, helped me realize some of the potential future pathways in sustainability through the things that I was already academically interested in. The accounting department for giving me the soft skills and the hard skills of data collection, analysis, and auditing to better make sure that I can tell a story with the data we're collecting. And additional thanks to other folks who have been constant supports over the years, Darla Haynes, Janine Wine, Shri Majumdar, Audrey Hampshire, Catherine Haft, Beata Gillier, Stacey Erickson, Tim Brock, Bart Burge, Thelma Rohr, and Jenna O'Kay, and many, many other folks who have come and gone. So without further ado, I'm going to leave it to some Q&A.
I would love to kick it off with a question for Jason. I'm interested in hearing a little bit about how activism on campus is different, kind of in your experience at Manchester versus your experience at Duke, which might be a larger school, and what kind of information or knowledge you've gained from those differences between those experiences.
I think one of the big differences, and you said it, is size. Manchester is about a tenth of the size of Duke University in terms of number of students, but the issues being raised are not dissimilar. And that's one thing that I've learned a lot, is that the amount of passion doesn't matter depending on the size of the student body. It matters on just the individual students who are willing to raise up their hand and ask a question. And so whether you're focused on climate advocacy, sunrise movement, ways to make Manchester more sustainable, those are the exact same types of conversations we're having on our campus. The only thing that is potentially slightly different, because I have not been on campus in quite a while, is that our groups are now more and more talking to each other. And so we have our diversity groups working with our climate groups, which is something that, like I said before, we're not going to solve this by working in our silos. We're going to have to solve it by working together.
Hello. It seems like we have lots of spurts of passion for sustainability on campus. It seems like there were a lot of things your college experience, and here and there, there's been programs that have been implemented. But how do you think we can promote a culture of sustainability, so a long-lasting passion for sustainability that surpasses generations of students that go through and is something that can be started as incoming classes come through and kind of taught as part of the Manchester community?
Something that we struggle with at Duke University too, because you're here for 4 years and then the students leave. How are they leaving their story behind, and who is picking up that banner and running forth with it? And so some of the things that I encourage is A, finding partners that are of staff and faculty who are willing to be that connecting thread, because they're typically here much longer than a 4-year stint at a school. The other thing that I've been trying to work more and more on is identifying ways for students to, when they're working on a project, document it in our campus's lab database. And so we have a database online on our website that is full of projects that students are doing related to sustainability on campus or in the Durham community. And that's something that then I can talk to new student groups who are starting up, and they're like, I'm really interested in learning about tree planting. I was like, great. We can easily connect you with the research that has already been done and the projects that have already been done, so you don't have to start from zero. Because I think that is one of the biggest issues, is starting from zero and potentially trying to do the same thing. It can waste a lot of that effort that has already been done before. And so if there's any way that you can start documenting what you're doing, I know that there's a website for student groups, and I think you can easily add some documents about here's what we're focusing on this year and here's where we got to. I think it's a really great place to start.
I'm a environmental studies major, and in some of our classes, we've actually started making sustainability plans and programs, but the issue we're running into is finding funding for it. How do you go about finding a large amount of funding to start projects like this on small campuses like Manchester?
First, I think that sounds like a really awesome project, and I would love to learn more about the types of things that you're doing. Funding is always pretty tricky. Even this, like, during the pandemic was a really difficult year on campus because we are dealing with economic downturn. I think many higher education institutions felt the same exact kind of pressures. And so thankfully, though, we have folks who are external to the campus that are willing to donate to a cause. And so even more recently, we've been approached by a couple of funders who are interested in certain topics related to sustainability. One of them is environmental health. And they're like, well, what can we do at Duke University around environmental health? And so we are gathering our faculty and staff who are experts in this field, and the students who are interested in it, and putting together a pitch to say, this is what we could do with your support. Some of the times that these folks are easier to find than others. Sometimes they just come to you. Sometimes you have to spend a little bit of effort to search them out. But we started with our Board of Trustees, which is a really great group that has a lot of connections, and institutional caring that can help support students' futures. And so I would recommend something like that. But there's always, if you ever wanted to do a campaign, climate change and sustainability is a pretty popular one right now, as folks are trying to find ways to make a change. Because with the most recent IPCC report, I think a lot of folks started to panic again, because every time it comes out, people panic about the impacts of climate change and how quickly it's happening. And so folks are looking for ways to get involved and how they can be best supportive. So if you have those plans, you're already halfway there.
Hello. So I'd like to just kind of ask a question that I think encapsulates your presentation with the other questions that have been asked so far. But in your presentation, you said that for sustainability, we need social, economic, and environmental. And I know myself and some other students have felt like the university has focused more on the social and economic parts of that idea. What can we as students do to try and get the university to focus more on the environmental aspect?
To be so fascinating, because I think at Duke we're sometimes the opposite, where a lot of our campus action has been around environment, and now we're trying to pivot more towards social and economic. So I'm very interested to hear maybe more about that sometime in the future. But I think when I was initially talking about setting goals, for the university, I think that's a really great place to start to even see like what has already happened to date. And I think the short list that I showed you is just scratching the surface of what is already happening on campus in terms of environmental sustainability. And so like, if you want to talk with faculty, staff, all the way up to administration about potential ways that you can set goals that are measurable and have a timeliness to it that you can actually see impact over time, I think that's a really great place to start saying, hey, we've had success in these two areas. We've got strong foundations. How can we take what we've learned in these two areas and apply it to environment? Because that's something that I'm always happy to help. You have advocates out there who are willing to help you strategize around that. But it's trying to get the entire campus to buy in as the first good step on that.
So I know that at a school like Duke, they might have better funding to have like staff and faculty specialize in sustainability. But at a small school like Manchester, how do you create action and sustainability if administration does not have as much eagerness to support and make change as students and faculty members?
That is definitely, Duke has a lot of faculty. We've got thousands of faculty and all of them are studying various topics. But sometimes I realize that a project that I wanna work in, even Duke doesn't have the expert. And that's okay. Right now we are talking about environmental justice a lot on campus and we are getting ready to hire our very first like faculty who's focusing environmental justice. But that doesn't always work out. And so what I end up doing, one of the things that as a part of my role, I'm also the co-chair of a consortium of our Ivy Plus schools, which is a collection of 30 plus research institutions. And we use each other to leverage kind of like, oh, you're an expert in this area. How can I work with your faculty on that to apply it to my campus? And so finding ways to do that has been really useful to kind of bring a broader sharing network between universities because you have them in Indiana. I am a mentor for one of the folks who works in sustainability office at Indiana University. And we talk a lot about similar questions and how to actually get things going. And so there might be ways to learn from those students at other campuses or their faculty to bring those folks together. I can't necessarily speak on behalf of getting more money for Manchester, because that's always a really tricky one. But it's something that if you can start working with other campuses, you can leverage their experience to benefit you.
Hi, I had a question about divestment from fossil fuels initiatives. I was wondering, first of all, if you could explain a little bit about that for us. We may not really understand what that is. And then also, what do you think about that? Is it a good thing? Is it useful for universities to divest from fossil fuel investments? What are the sort of pros and cons of that briefly?
I think it was like maybe 5 years ago at Duke University, we had a group of students come forth called Divest Duke. And so they started bringing up questions just like you brought up. And so I got to crash course in what that actually means, because I never did much in the investment world before having this conversation with them. But divesting generally means to stop investing in certain companies that have major impacts on climate change. And one thing that I find interesting about it is that there's a lot of companies that are contributing to climate change, but there's, I think, a smaller handful of ones who are making a larger impact. I have a very interesting like perspective on this where I don't necessarily always think that it's only the companies who are need to be brought to bear, but I think that's where the major points are. And so working with them to actually improve versus considering working with the millions of consumers to improve, it's a little bit easier to talk to 100 people than a million people. And so at Duke University, we currently don't have any direct investments in fossil fuel products, but we have what direct investments, meaning Duke University is stewarding that money directly towards certain investment strategies. But we have a lot of investments that are done through fund managers, and those folks might be investing in companies that contribute to climate change. And so those, it gets a little bit tricky because they're constantly buying and selling. And so at one point they could be not invested, other points they could be invested. And so it got a little bit tricky to discern, you know, how to do that. But many higher level institutions are making that move to divest. Duke has not to this date made a big statement about not divesting in the future, or not investing in the future in climate change companies. But it's something that I don't always know how best to approach it. And so we've got some folks who are saying, well, it's just, if it's an investment and you're selling off that investment, somebody else will buy it. And so did you make a change? Is it just symbolic? And to me, that is a very interesting point. But also, doing things symbolically can also be a really useful metric to kind of point to, saying like, hey, we're doing this, and it might inform a lot of other companies and schools to do the same thing. And then those companies, like, let's say BP, for instance, might say, oh, well, let's start thinking about what does our future of energy use look like. And so one particular example about that is Duke Energy is our utility provider in North Carolina, and they have submitted a plan for reducing their fossil fuel use over the next, I think it's like 25 years, I could be wrong, which is great. It's something that hadn't happened before. But seeing that plan, how can we actually accelerate that is kind of our goal when trying to talk with these companies. I know this is kind of like a roundabout statement because it's not an easy consideration depending on how the investment is going and if investment decisions are being made. But at least asking the question and trying to pivot towards some of these funds that have more environmental, social governance aspects to them, I think is a really great place to start. And it's not set calling for perfect divestment, but just movement, moving the needle towards them.
Hi, Jason, it's Katie. Glad you're here. I have a question that came when you were presenting the Sustainable Development Goals, which we try to highlight in peace studies and relate to the activities that we have. But those are really, as you mentioned, broad goals. And I wonder, working in the area that you do, you find hope when there are so many discouraging signs, when there are so many reports that that emphasize the severity of the crisis that we're in.
It's always it's a tricky one. And I'm not going to say that I'm always perfectly hopeful, but I have to work towards hope if I'm going to be able to continue in this world and in the sustainability world. Because at the end of the day, I'm able to see small changes and ripples in on campus, in the local community, even in the nation. Like, there are things that are changing, and that gives me hope. I have to have hope to see this continuing. And so some of these efforts that the United Nations developed, we're trying to identify, like, you know, how does Duke fit with these sustainable development goals? Things like no hunger. We have students who are food insecure on campus. We have graduate students who might be housing insecure. Things that I don't always know about because I don't talk with all the tens of thousands of people on campus. But how can we actually do better, at least on campus? It might not solve the entire world, but how are we taking that and carving it out for just us? The other thing that I try to think about is that you can't do everything given your available time, financial resources, and just mental energy. And so carving out the things that you're like, this is where I feel successful. And so you won't necessarily be tackling all 17 SDGs. You might be just tackling one or two of them and trying to come up with at least the baseline, what's currently going on and what can we do to potentially make it better. And those tiny movements are the things that keep giving me hope to keep going. And I hope that other folks feel the same way, because climate change can be daunting, but being able to see everybody's hands like reaching around and helping out is something that gives me a little bit more hope, because I won't probably solve climate change in my lifetime. I might be a part of a group who educates the folks who do that, but I need to keep in mind that I just need to carry the ball forward a little bit at least.
Other questions? Anybody? Well, thank you, Jason, so much for taking the time and chatting with us. I think we can do a round of applause now. And we're clapping. Yay! Thank you, Jason.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. Special thanks to Anne Gregory for providing the audio for this program. Our music is by Mark Waldick, Noah Campodonico, Kurt Remke, and Hope Arthur. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Monica Blankenship, Mackay Bowers, Steve Mullaney, Kyle Norbeck, Diamond Thomas, Michaela Veltum, and Sydney Wagner. Until next time, thank you for listening. From WBOI, Fort Wayne.